Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at openhouseonline.com.au.
Well, it's a song that has filled many a dance floor over the years. That's 1988. I can still remember listening to it, even playing it. I'll tell you about that in a little second. 1988. And the song is called The Only Way Is Up, and it's recorded by this tall disco diva with short peroxide hair. Her name was Yaz. Well, that little tune took her to international fame right across the UK, Europe, and right here in Australia. And in 22 years, can you believe it, 22 years since that song was released, life has actually taken many a turn for that London-born singer. There's been success, heartache, a move to Spain, and even a spiritual transformation. And that's why I'm so glad that Yaz is on the line to tell us a little bit about the story. Yaz, welcome to Open House.
Thank you, Sheridan. Good to talk to you.
Oh, I tell you, who'd have thought? Yaz, a little known part of my story that some folks won't know about is that before I'm doing these kinds of things, I was DJing in nightclubs in the late 80s and early 90s, and I was playing your songs. I was playing your music.
Oh. You know, that's wonderful.
Who'd have thought that all these years later we'd be connecting up like this?
It's real fantastic how one song can just bring so many people together.
Yeah, in many ways that's what it's done. Let's talk about your childhood, and let's talk about the story that's happened since that particular song. Tell me about that childhood in West London. Mum's English, Dad's Jamaican.
That's right. Yes, my father came originally from the Caribbean, from Jamaica. So we grew up a very colourful home with lots of music and lots of company. You know, Jamaicans love company as well as cricket. And really a very loving home, actually. My mum and dad were very, very close and loving parents. We had three children, and I was the youngest and probably the spoiled, I suppose. And we lived in an area of London which was very filled with ethnic minorities, because during that time, obviously, England was going through this whole transition of interracial mixes, and so we lived in a corner of London with the Irish and the Jews and the West Indians, and it was a wonderful, wonderful way to grow up, filled with markets, street markets, and yeah, wonderful, vibrant times.
And it was your dad who introduced you to music, right?
That's right. Dad would play all kinds of music at home. And you remember those old sideboards that used to have a record machine inside? Goodness me. And he'd play me fantastic artists, Charlie Parker and Ella Fitzgerald. And he'd talk to me a lot about music and writers and composers. And
when did you start singing personally?
Really quite late, because I was quite... Can't believe I was quite a shy child. I was quite introspective really growing up. You know, probably dealing with things that were going on racially. So I think that made me quite introverted in some ways.
Yeah, because anybody who's seen you and seen, you know, the album covers of the past and everything, I mean, there's definitely, you can see the Jamaican influence there. So did you cop a bit of racism as a result of that, did you?
Yeah, not as much as my older brothers and sisters, but we did. Yes, I did.
Yeah.
I'm very grateful that my father was very... father was a union man, and he had this kind of wonderful understanding and knowledge of, you know, what was really at the heart of discrimination. And so he was able to teach us as children how to deal with it. But it did begin, I guess, to birth questions and these kind of messages that started to come out later in my music. Certainly on the first album, the tracks like Get Rid of the Ghetto and We've Got to Share and so on.
Yeah, there you are. This is Open House across the nation. Yaz is with us. You remember that song, The Only Way Is Up, and all the others that followed afterwards. Well, there's been quite a story since, and that story is unfolding as Yaz is with us now. So you leave high school, and then you get stuck into nightclubs and start DJing. I mean, you would have been one of the first female DJs around in the nightclubs, I'd imagine, around about that time as well.
I was so bad as well, I got to tell you. I was the only one who could be a DJ, and the whole dance floor would just be empty. Oh, that's very good. But yes, I started to work in Soho, which is a kind of very nightclubby area in London, and my eyes were really open there. And I was DJing. And I guess, you know, I was really searching for myself and identity and so on, which we all go through. And it was there that I met some people in the music business and other musicians and, like you say, DJs. And I felt very comfortable, you know, in their company, and eventually found myself in a band. And that was it. You know, music had grabbed my heart and was opening me up, and I felt comfortable there. And that was it. I started to get into music, and then I started to sing then. So quite late, in a sense, for some people.
And for those people who are around nightclubs around about that time or listening to that kind of music, people would know that Jonathan Moore and Matt Black were the people behind the band Cold Cut, who had a whole heap of club anthems that they actually released. And teamed up with them, and it was your voice on Doctor in the House. Again, one of those albums, one of those 12 inches I was playing at the time.
You know your stuff,
Sheridan. Oh, boy, there's a black box and everything. Anyway, after that, so you continue on. Now, obviously, you start to find this, like you said, this community of people that you start to feel embraced by and accepted by. But of course, you start to see, as any of us have spent time in the club industry, you start to see the seedy side of it too.
Oh, definitely. Goodness me, yes. I met a lot of women, you know, who had turned the corners, met the wrong people, and were doing all kinds of things with drugs and relationships. And I met, pimps and people with guns, and it did open my eyes to another side of the world and living in reality of what's going on in the world.
Yeah.
Then I met Matt, and introduced me to Matt. And I think by then, all those things I'd seen were starting to influence and shape what I wanted to do in the music. You know, I mean, what Cold Cut were doing, I thought was really innovative and... We didn't really realize it, but I knew something was happening that was growing and was probably going to be this new genre, really, of music, wasn't it?
Yeah, definitely, absolutely. In the UK, and particularly London, was the center of that whole new house music scene. It just went around the world from there.
Well, yeah. In fact, it came out of Chicago originally.
Oh, yes, okay, if you go back,
Yeah, and then it hit London, but London really took it to its extreme, I think, and really got on top of it, and it was very exciting. It was a new beat. It was something almost high energy, wasn't it, you know, and very exciting, pulsating. Technology was growing, so you could actually play with music, and you didn't have to own expensive studios. You could play around with things, and I learned a lot working with them.
I bet you did. So 1988 rolls around, and The Only Way Is Up is released, and that just went huge. I mean, it was the biggest selling single in the UK for the year, and it was huge over here. Just how did that song and the fame that followed change your life?
Oh, enormously, enormously. You know, like I said, you know, when you're just starting something, and the whole creative process is exciting, and you have no concept of what's around the corner. So we'd finished kind of Doctor in the House, and we knew we'd got into the public eye with that track. So we were back in the studio working on new material, and with the hope that we were going to just be able to get a record deal for an album, which we did. And we finished The Only Way Is Up. We had no idea, you know, what it was going to do. None at all. And we were given a great opportunity to sing it on a big TV in England. And literally from one night to the next, my whole life changed. I mean, it hit 17 million people. I remember the next day just getting in the car, I heard a couple of people shout, is that you? I was looking, thinking, who they're talking to. That journey, that whole week, made me realise, oh my goodness.
What have I done?
My life's never going to be the same again.
Yeah.
You know, putting petrol in the garage or shopping down in the supermarket, people would just come along and say, I love that song and I'm going to buy it. And you look shorter than on TV, or you look taller than you are on TV. And it's terrifying, actually.
This is Open House right across the nation. Her name is Yaz, and the big song that you'll remember her for is The Only Way Is Up. There were plenty of others, but that's the one that will stick in your mind, I'm sure. I read somewhere that after that huge experience of fame with that song, that you started to feel like a bit of a commodity. At what point did that happen?
Probably during the recording of that, of the first album, really.
Oh, okay, yeah. That early.
I think because we'd had a number one, which, as you said, changes everything. Doors open, you are in constant demand. The recognition of the record company that you have the potential to make a lot of money just begins, you know, and this huge monster of a machine just starts to groan into action. People think it's probably this great buzz and you're having a ball. You're actually working fat out, solid. You have to take every opportunity in your country and abroad to promote. Then you're back in the studio. And slowly, I think I began to realize that the initial creative process was changing because this machine had taken over and conversations had changed to when's the next one ready? What are you going to do? You know, what's going to make it sell more? Kind of marketing meetings regularly, you're discussing, people are telling you, I think you ought to wear this, you know, it's, I don't know, they were holding up things like see-through 90s, saying, you know, this is going to sell more records, blah, blah, blah. And I would just sit there going, I'm not wearing that, this is not who I am. And, you know, just very slowly, this machine begins to try and mold you into a product that will sell more. And the less of the heart of the artist was able to blossom, sadly. I found it quite difficult.
Was it during that time that you started, you know, asking those spiritual questions, started thinking, you know, is there anything more to this?
Yeah, definitely. Well, by the second album, it's not that I hadn't, I suppose I had lost touch with reality in some respects, you know, because I'd lost a lot of my friends because you just don't have time. I felt very vulnerable, in fact, because, you know, I thought I'd kind of been in control, like most of us do, during that period, and I was realizing that I'd completely lost control. And a lot of people around me in the industry, my contemporaries, I began to see were suffering, you know, in abusive situations. A lot of them in rehab. And so, yes, I did begin to question, you know, wait a minute. You know, I love singing and I love music and I love to entertain. And I wasn't fulfilled, really. And I get, and a lot of people, well, I guess the music business at that time was really involved with, I guess, Eastern philosophies, Buddhism and meditation. A lot of people were into New Age. And so I naturally sort of started to get into that and ask questions about, you know, why am I not fulfilled? You know, I should be. I've reached, I guess, what the world has educated me to think that was going to bring me a sense of fulfillment and satisfaction, achievement. I'd reached the top of my career in some respects. And why was I lonely? Why was I going home lonely and feeling dissatisfied? And I began to say, well, okay, there must be something more than this and more important than this. And ask the deeper, meaningful questions that I think everybody comes to, everybody on the whole planet. You know, God, I believe in God, as you know, and if God has created us to be in relationship with him, then at some point your questions will bring you to that point where you say, well, which God, whose God? You know, I was like, which God, which philosophy, which faith? You know, who God, what God? Is there a God?
And around about this time, and maybe it was a little bit afterwards, I mean, your life started to spiral down as well, health-wise. There was a marriage that failed there and panic attacks and things like that. That was around about this time or leading to this time?
I was well into looking at different faiths and going to seminars and meeting gurus and so on. And at the same time, you know, I had no creative juice at all. So things were failing in the music business and my relationship along with it, which I was deeply, deeply ashamed. And it was a public divorce that began, which was very difficult. And I began to lose all sense of worth and purpose in my life and meaning and I was just trying to fill that ache inside with everything, with work and alcohol and more books and more work and more alcohol and more relationship, and eventually spiraled really into this place of constant panic, and you know, fear was kind of my constant companion. And
you couldn't leave home actually for a while there, could you?
No. I was agoraphobic for weeks. Some terrible thoughts came upon me, and yeah, you know, there's a scripture that says, "If you search for me with all your heart and all your soul and all your mind, you will find me." And you know, that is so true, because I was really crying out, saying, you know, if there's a God and you're there, you know, I'm crying, I'm really limping, and I need your help, and just would you reveal yourself to me, because I can't find you. I remember asking my mom, in fact, for a Bible one evening, and I'd kind of exhausted everything, and I remember thinking, I have exhausted every faith except this faith of this book.
Yeah, and why had you not looked into the Christian faith up until that point?
Well, you know, I had so many preconceived ideas about Christianity. I was very judgmental. I guess through media's interpretations. I had no relationship with Christians. I didn't know anything about the author of the book. So, you know, it's definitely in mind, you know, what I'd learnt or listened to or heard had influenced me, sadly.
And so why did you ask your mum for a Bible then? Where did the idea of a Bible then come in?
That's exactly a good question, because now I know and understand and have a relationship with God that He is constantly looking. There's this wonderful story in the Bible which really inspired this album, actually, that I've written, about the prodigal sons, and it talks about how God is symbolized through this father, and one of his sons goes off into the world and takes his inheritance and blows it all and has an amazing time. And I always related to that story when I first heard it in a church, because the son wakes up one morning and realizes that, you know, he's done it all and he's spent it all, and actually he's empty and he wants to come home to his father. And there's this great picture in the story where you see the father sees his son from far off coming home. He begins to run to his child. He doesn't stand there going, "Oh, son, you're a fool. You went out. You blew it. You didn't listen to me." He runs. And there's this glimpse to me of the father's heart, that when we are searching and lost and confused and we just take that step to turn back, he is there running, and he runs back, you know. And I think that's what happened, that particular time. I was so running in my own heart and looking and searching, and God came to me in this thought. And I said to my mom, you know, "Do we have a Bible? You know, I've looked at everything else. Do we have a Bible?" And she said, "I think we do." And I just opened this golden book, as I call it, and I didn't know what I was reading. I didn't understand it very clearly. But I remember the impact of, part when the interview where you think, "Are people going to think you're weird or whatever?" But I had an overwhelming flooding of such peace.
And do you remember what you were reading when you felt that?
No, I don't remember. I just remember laying this book down and experiencing, for, I don't know, a very short time, a sense of almost saturation of warm joy, a love like you can't imagine. Just sort of, you know, when you first fall in love, there's this extraordinary emotion that you have, you know. It was a million times more than that. It was just wonderful. And I knew that, you know, okay, I have finally connected with a divine source, and see, it's something to do with this book.
Yeah, see, Yaz, this is the thing that I find so exciting is the fact that if people would want to say, "Look, that was just kind of probably just a psychological trick that your brain was, you know, playing on the rest of your body." I mean, the fact is that you had searched a whole bunch of different spiritual pathways, and that hadn't happened with those other searches. There was something different here. There was something divine. There was something that God himself actually spoke to you through the words of Scripture, and somehow you had this amazing experience of God. It's more than just some sort of psychological trick.
Yes, absolutely. You know, I was searching so much for truth. I was searching for this. I wanted to experience the presence of God. I wanted to have it resound in my very being that I had found truth, absolute truth, and authority. And you know, you can fool yourself. You know when you've met with the authority of God. Your innermost being has been created by God. And that connection is always constantly drawing you to God. You know, because God says, I've put eternity in the hearts of man. Mm-hmm. So, you know, he's placed that inside humanity, that place where you will connect with God, I think.
Yeah.
And you know when you found it.
Yeah, a deeper fulfillment. Yaz, singer-songwriter and, you know, one-time disco guru is with us tonight. You're hearing her story of what happened after that huge hit that you'd probably know, The Only Way Is Up. So, Yaz, you then have this experience as you're reading the Bible. Was that when you kind of came through and said, yes, I'm going to follow this Jesus Christ that the Bible is actually telling me about? You know, was it that night? Was it that day? Was it a week later or what?
Well, not really. No, it was the journey and the process, I think, and I made the decision that night that I needed to learn about this book. I wanted to know what had happened to me, and what I made the decision that night was that I was going to try a church.
Mm-hmm.
I did try a church. Within a couple of weeks, I began to get a bit stronger. And I was determined to go to a church at the end of my road, which I did. And if I'm really honest, you know, I walked in, it was quite peaceful, but nobody really spoke much to me. And I remember, again, you see, God met me because I remember coming out of the building and thinking, well, you know, maybe it isn't in there. Maybe, you know, maybe I was wrong. And I turned the corner. And I bumped into a girlfriend called Bonnie. Bonnie was the girl who used to bleach my hair. Okay, she's a hairdresser.
Is that right?
Yeah, and she was, you know, Bonnie was a good time girl. You know, Bonnie was, if you went out with Bonnie, you were going to come back at 4, you would be plastered, she would be stoned.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Bonnie knew how to party, and I'm looking at this woman in front of me and thinking, well, what's happened to her, you know, because she just looked different. And she said, what are you doing here? And I said, well, Bonnie, you know, I've just been in this church. And she said, listen, let's go for coffee. And there was just a radiance about her and a changing in her. And again, I remember sitting thinking, I was asking myself, what is it? You know, what is this? And it was like that same... I guess I felt comfortable and peaceful and safe in her presence. And, of course, I mean, I didn't understand anything about the Spirit of God, the Holy Spirit.
Yeah, yeah.
That comes to fill each new believer.
Yeah.
And I remember saying to her, you know, Bonnie, what's happened to your life? And she said, yeah, she won't believe it. I've met with Jesus Christ in my life, and I've become a Christian. And I just suddenly fell off the bench. I mean, I said, you know, and she said, yeah, you know, why don't you come and try my church? It's really great. We've got carpet on the floor and pastor with a sense of humor, and you'll love it, you know, just see. And I said, I will, Bonnie, you know, I will, because, you know, whatever can make such a marked difference in somebody's life like that, I want to know.
Mm-hmm.
I want to know who can do that. You know, that's the God you want to serve, isn't it, that can change lives.
Mm-hmm.
And impact lives now, you know.
That's it.
He's real.
Absolutely, not just simply in heaven, although that change is going to be pretty amazing, but changes lives right now.
Bring it on.
Hey, yes, your life, I mean, that was 14 years ago, wasn't it, when you found the person of Jesus, you gave your life to him, and you had that change and that turnaround in your life, 14 years ago. And now, you know, you're living a very different life now, aren't you? You're happily married, you're in Spain, you're leading worship in various churches every weekend. And you're working with drug addicts and alcoholics and all sorts of things. You mean the change in your own life has been pretty profound, hasn't it?
Yes, it was a very, very, very profound experience, I think, yeah. Not everyone's the same, but God's really captured my heart. And, you know, I spent a few years when I became a believer just becoming a new wife and moving country, like you say, and getting to know on whom I believe, really. You know, I wanted to run back and make a new album and make Christian music and la, la, la. But in fact, best decision I think I made was that I didn't. You know, I just started to study and learn about Christianity, and I did some courses, and I just, you know, it's a relationship. Yeah. And so my heart became very broken to bring people back into relationship with their Father in heaven and themselves. And if I could do that through music, then I knew that I was going to have to learn more about the Father.
Yeah, and that's what you did, and you had that time out and you studied, and now you are recording again songs like this. Can you hear?
Exciting. It's been a great journey, and it's led me to so many doors I would never have imagined.
Yeah.
You see, so, you know, once you get back in relationship with God, he's got things planned for you that you never dreamt of. Mm.
Well, Yaz, the nightclub queen, is now the voice that's
now servant.
Now a servant voice and a writer and ministering to the broken. And well, it's just been a joy to catch up with you, Yaz. And thanks so much for your time.
Thank you.
Hey,
it's been fantastic, and God bless you and all your listeners.
We hope you enjoyed this Open House podcast, thanks to Christian Super and Real World Technology. To hear more from Open House, visit openhouseonline.com.au.